I would just rage. That was my go-to. You know, if I raised my voice and I screamed loud enough, maybe he'll listen. And so that was how it was. And that, or I would just have a meltdown and say, you know, you don't love me anymore and this is not working. And, you know, divorce was always on my mind for many years. So we really fully realized at that time that we needed help. And the main issue was communication.
Yeah, I think when I look back at the worst of my behavior, my communication problems were, number one is I thought I knew it all and I didn't have to listen. And when I was listening, I wasn't listening to understand. I was listening to form an argument to convince my partner that she was wrong and that she should listen to me and do it my way. Or in the old days, before individual recovery, I would be trying to convince her of something that wasn't true because I was trying to protect all of my acting out behavior. And it's kind of ironic because I actually teach people communication. So it's a little humbling to realize that in my own relationship, I'm not good at it. I didn't listen well, and when I spoke, I would often have a tone that would be condescending and put my partner off. And instead of listening to what I was saying, she was reacting to my tone. That was not helpful at all. More often, when Agnes would get activated and she would start raging, I would shut down, and I would stop communicating. And I would avoid, and I would withdraw, and I would just go silent. And that's probably even worse than the arguments, in a way. So it got pretty bad. I mean, we've been in individual recovery for 20 years, or almost 22 years this year. So then it would have been like 18 years of individual recovery, and we're still not knowing how to be in a relationship together. So it was a real humbling, eye-opening experience to realize how bad it was for us, and to look at my part in it was really not pleasant. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. Fortunately, apparently we're here because it's not that way for us anymore.
Yeah, 95% of the time. We're still in the process of learning just a little bit better how to tweak it. And, you know, we still get into really miscommunication. And we're learning more tools as we go along. I think the issue for us was that we just didn't want to accept help. We didn't want to be in another meeting. And we wanted to do it on ourselves. If our individual programs were working, why couldn't we just do it ourselves? And that was the problem, is that we were trying to engage with all that history, with all that dysfunction. We're going to do it. You know, we'll work it out. And it never worked. That we did have an issue with communication. There was nowhere to turn but another recovery program, a couples recovery program. And Trailblazers has been a saving meeting for us. We've been now 5 years, I think.
5 years.
Right. And so every time now a problem comes up, we have the tools to start using right away, or we just let it go. It, because we can't do it together anymore for the rest of our marriage, we're going to bring it up to a sponsor couple first, and pause and see what they say about it as we're working through the steps. So that's been beneficial.
Yeah, I think that, you know, making that commitment to RCA was the first important step. And then I know for me, the safety guidelines were a really big help in being able to stay present, to know that my partner and I are both committing to avoiding those problem behaviors of blaming and name-calling and inventory-taking, those were big triggers for both of us. And so the safety guidelines provided a container for us so that we stayed, you know, between the rails, so to speak. The other thing that I think was really helpful was doing service. I will admit that my communication was poor when I volunteered us for service before checking that out with my partner first. So that's one of the things that has changed for us, is we don't make unilateral decisions about the coupleship before checking with our partner. And that has been really helpful, because that's not how it used to be. You want to talk about the meetings too?
Sure. The service. Okay, well, we caught on fairly quickly, and we get to know people doing service anyways, even though it was thrown into our coupleship suddenly within the first month. But at least we started to get to know, you know, a lot of members of Trailblazers, which was just wonderful way to get to know people more on a personal basis.
I don't think we need to do breakout rooms.
The meetings of two was one of the first tools I think we used when issues started to come up. And boy, was that difficult. The first year, at least, was difficult. Because we were still triggering each other, we didn't do the steps yet. So we were not sure what was going on, what was triggering. And we would have a lot of timeouts. We'd try to give each other 2 minutes and go ballistic, and then put the timeout and walk away for about 15 minutes just to breathe and calm down. So we eventually got it so that we're not afraid anymore, because a lot of our character defects for each of us is the deep insecurity and the shame of, you know, of some of these issues were creeping up, and we were reacting to those kinds of feelings. We didn't know how to express our feelings with. The safety guideline was like, what does that mean, I statements? What the heck does that mean? I want to blame and shame my partner. And so to reverse that and go, I feel this, when this behavior occurs, I feel triggered, I feel hurt, I feel angry. Those kind of things was very new for me in a new language, and it took a long time to adapt it.
Yeah, I think that just the meetings of two provided, again, a container where we had the safety guidelines in place, and then we had a limitation for how long we would speak. I remember in the bad old days of having conversations that went until 2 or 3 in the morning that never ended, and had to be at work at 7 the next day. That was insane. And so as a result of that, I had big fear about being vulnerable and showing up and participating in a real conversation without a witness. So the meetings of two really helped us turn that around. And then, you know, we got working with our sponsor couple was another really important aspect of the transformation of our communication. They witnessed us at our worst and modeled for us respectful communication, and they accepted us. And I think that really helped me grow and realize that it's okay to make mistakes, right? That's one of the safety guidelines. And
it's nice
it really helped me feel, again, yeah. Feel safe and encouraged. Just opening up and being honest and sharing from my heart with my partner in the presence of another couple who are really holding that for us. Mm. You want to say anything about that?
I think I did. So part of our step work was making agreements. And one of the biggest ones was the conflict agreements. You know, we really had to just kind of write it all this stuff down. It's awkward, it's weird, it's tedious, but at least it gives us a new foundation to build on. This is what these agreements are. And we got it from, and made our own versions from this book. I don't know if anybody can see that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we adapted that to our particular situation and our coupleship. And so we had several agreements that we worked on with our couple sponsor and shared it with them. And doesn't mean we were all adhering to it every time, but at least it just gave us the, oh, remember when we said this, remember when we worked this, instead of winging it out in the air. It's like, what, you know, where is it coming from? And so reverting back to that base of, oh, yeah, that's what we agreed on. We already talked about this. Oops, I made a mistake. I apologize and I will correct and do better next time. Because it's not perfectionism. It's just a process of getting better and better. But you got to start with some.
Yeah.
So
I think going through the process of reviewing the agreement templates that are in that book and then adapting it to our particular situation, typing them up, going over them together, sharing them with our sponsor couple, really was important in highlighting awareness. Like, helping me become aware of what are the things that work and what are the things that don't work. And interestingly, we didn't really have to revert back to the agreements very much after we wrote them. It's like that it was the process of writing them that really highlighted for us what we needed to do differently. And as a result of that, I think we're not perfect. We still make mistakes. I still make mistakes. And the difference between before recovery, before the couple's recovery and now is that we catch the mistakes. I call it catch and release. We catch ourselves in the moment. We go, oh, wait a minute. Let's not do that. Or let's put that on pause and bring it to our sponsor couple. Or let's have a meeting of two about it. So we notice it and we don't let it control us anymore the way that it used to. It's not that it still doesn't happen, but it doesn't take us down into the mud the way that it used to. The communication agreement and the respectful conflict agreements both were really instrumental in helping us get better at that.
So I have the communication agreement here, and it has bullet points. I mean, just for examples of what we agreed to or wrote down in addition to the book's version. We agreed to follow the communication agreement even if our partner does not. When this happens, we agree to use the words like, I feel we're out of compliance with our communication agreement right now. Can we begin again? The other ones, we attempt active listening to clarify understanding before responding to our partner. We agreed to keep conversations to current issues. Nothing like me dredging up the past history. I stand as guilty on that. We agreed to speak and act respectfully to one another and to treat each other with kindness and compassion. That's crucial too. What's the respectfully speaking to each other look like when we've been engaging and slamming each other for many, many years? And,
So one of the other things on the communication agreement that we added that I'll use as a segue into the next piece here is that we agree to, where is it? We agree to keep conversations to current issues and commit to a daily check-in to remain current. So I want to use that as a springboard. We're talking about the evolution of our couples recovery, where we learned about in Trailblazers, there was a couple that brought in a stuffed chicken, and they were talking about doing their 10th step check-ins, and that was really cute. We liked that, so Agnes found us a chicken so that we could do our chickens also. And we started doing the 10th step check-in using the format that's in the Green Book. And along the way, Agnes is usually the one leading our evolution here, because she's, I think, more sensitive and aware and fearless than I am. And she said, you know, the 10-step check-in is pretty good, but we're only doing it once in a while, and I think it would be better if we did something every day.
That's we really needed to do this initially on a daily basis, because our tendency to, on both our parts, to avoid. Yeah, life is good. Let's keep going. And it's never worked unless we were more disciplined and doing it every day. Now it's like every 2 days after about a year of doing that. And so, but it was crucial at the beginning that we discipline ourselves into checking in daily. Some people do it more, some people do it less, some people are still in daily for the rest of their marriage. Whatever works for each couple is perfectly acceptable. So that was helpful. So nobody was bringing it up or being responsible about our check-in and our coupleship, work. So, so that really was helpful.
Yeah. So, as part of our individual recovery, we always did daily readings. And we, I have this daily reader from ACA, Strengthening My Recovery. We've both participated in Codependence Anonymous meetings, and so we have the language of letting go. This one I've been through probably 20 times. And then as part of our 11-step work, we're trying to discover, what spiritual, connection we had. And we found this book called 365 Tao, which is something that speaks to both of us, and we use that. So we have those three books now that we've brought into our couple recovery. And when we do our check-in, we sort of have a ritual where we start by doing the readings from each of these three books. And one day, Agnes will read two books, and I'll read one. And the other day, I'll read two books, and Agnes will read one. And on the day that Agnes reads the two books, we do the 7-step prayer. Mm-hmm. And on the day that I read the two books, we do the 3rd-step prayer. And the step prayers was sort of an evolution that came in when we learned about them and really found them powerful for us. And then added to that, in sharing our process with our couple sponsor, they shared with us some metta affirmations that they do, and we asked them to send them to us, and so we've now incorporated some of those as well.
Explain what metta is.
So metta is like a loving kindness meditation, a Buddhist practice of sending loving kindness to yourself, to others, and to the world. And so what we'd like to do is sort of, in the time we have remaining, is sort of just demonstrate.
Oh, I was going to say a little bit more about the 3rd and 7th step prayers. We did a couple workshops on the 7th in particular, because that outlines everything of our dysfunction, mm-hmm. and realigning us with the right look, the right perspective on how to approach our coupleship. Mm-hmm. It really is a mutual prayer of removing these defects again. Because we need that on a daily basis to do that prayer to our coupleship higher power. The other one is the affirmations was also a key for us, because we didn't say to each other for most of our marriage positive things. We slipped into negative, comments, sarcasm for me and my part. Very good at sarcasm. And it wasn't a real loving, joyful thing to say to each other. So we end our daily check-ins with finally looking at each other eye to eye and go, I appreciate all that you're doing. Mm-hmm. I hold you in high truth. I forgot some of the...
We'll do it.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
So we got 8 minutes.
All right.
I don't think we're going to do all the readings. We showed what the books are, so you want to just start.
Okay, well, we start with the Serenity Prayer.
We just did the readings.
Well, we did the readings. Okay. Yeah. So the first reading is the ACA. This is all showing our background here of our individual programs, ACA and the CODA book. We do our readings and the Tao.
You want to just read that one?
Which one? The altar?
Yeah, this one. Yeah.
Okay. All right. This is from the Tao because our religious spiritual beliefs are completely different, and we've learned how to respectfully accept our differences in that area. So the Tao is a kind of a bridge. Each day I forge my body into steel and fold in bright strands of consciousness, piling up ripe fruit and fragrant flowers, lighting red candles and incense, serving tea, rice, and wine, anointment with aromatic oils, offering heart and bones. The altar is my anvil, sun and moon, the coals, discipline of the hammer, lungs, the bellow. Followers of Tao have private altars in their homes. The pious see an altar only for supplication. The skeptic sees the altar as false and insincere. Actually, devotional effort is absolutely necessary for those beginning on the path. True spiritual cultivation begins with the premise that you already have a pure spirit and only need to clear away obfuscation. Thus, one must work on both the physical and mental levels in order to achieve the quickest results. Such varied efforts need a strong center. By focusing on the altar as the platform for all practices, you will keep yourself strongly on your path. The outward acts then pile up like offerings after offerings, and the outward motive furniture becomes your means of memorializing your efforts. Then your body itself becomes a steel altar, an unshakable moment to spiritual devotion. So after that, we do the seventh step prayers. You want to go ahead and say that? The affirmations we put together. We have enough time. We have enough money. We have enough grace.
I want to be more sensitive to my partner.
Can you say this?
Yeah, we say this.
Oh, okay.
I want to be more sensitive to my partner as sensitivity to my partner opens awareness of my innermost self.
Higher power, help me become more open and aware. I need to see my own fear behind my shortcomings, my tendency to be sarcastic and stubborn, my tendency to blame and make my partner wrong, my need to make my partner feel disrespected and less than. Higher power, help me find the courage to acknowledge my own shortcomings instead of focusing on those of my partner.
I promise to try to use the coupleship tools I have learned to stop interrupting my partner, to speak for my statements,
and to acknowledge the strengths my partner brings to our coupleship. Higher power, teach me humility and remove my character defects so that I may love more sincerely and completely.
Amen.
And here are the metta. May you love and accept yourself. May you love and accept yourself just as you are.
May you love and accept yourself just as you are.
May you be held in great compassion.
May you be held in great compassion.
May your sorrows and struggles and fears be eased.
May your sorrows and struggles and fears be eased.
May you live with a wise and peaceful heart.
May you live with a wise and peaceful heart.
May you be at peace in the midst of a changing world.
May you be at peace in the midst of a changing world.
Today we will practice love and faith in the face of fear and danger. We have an issue with that last word. It's written as anger, but anger is okay, just how you express it, so I change it to danger. Okay, and we agreed that asking each other how we're feeling was crucial. I'm emotional, I feel, and this is how I connect intimately with Dave on a feeling basis. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling grateful. I'm feeling nervous. Self-conscious. But mostly grateful and I'm feeling connected with you and doing the service, which is surprising. I'm a little disappointed in how I played golf this morning. I made too many mistakes, and yet there was some encouraging signs, so I'm going to take that with me for the next time. And I'm grateful to have a daughter here. Grateful to have recovery together and have a partner who's dedicated to doing it. Embarrassed about making mistakes in front of people, and yet it's okay. We're doing the best we can, and I'm doing the best I can. But this really, really gratitude is the overarching feeling. So thank you, Chloe. That's it.
Thank you for sharing.
How are you doing?
I'm feeling also lots of gratitude. We have come so far. I'm glad that we're here in this workshop and being able to share our long, long journey that we've arrived and tweaking it, and what a luxury. I'm grateful for you and grateful for your continuing to work and provide income to our coupleship so that I can retire very comfortably. Still working on the mistrust issue we had this morning about you arriving after golf on time so that we could prepare for this workshop. And I'm grateful that is a change behavior that is working out very well for us. And so, grateful for you. Thank you for engaging and communicating and not being afraid all throughout this whole journey, because it is scary. And so, with that, I'm in.
Sure. Okay, that's what we do. Oftentimes it's longer, but I see we've got about 40 seconds left or so, and any last things you want to share?
No, like I said, we had to break this down, at first to just retrain ourselves. Basically like any other recovery program, we have to retrain ourselves as a couple and to start, and that's by practicing a lot. So we're in it.
I would say for myself, oftentimes when I'm checking in my feelings, there are lots and lots of silences because I'm trying to figure out what is it exactly that I am feeling. And how do I say that? And I'm getting better at it. So with practice, that's it for us. Thank you for letting us share.